This is Chasing Wisdom, your source for conversation and serious ideas for those striving to become wiser leaders in business. Your host is Dr. Sam Serto. Sam is the Steinmetz Professor of Management in the Graduate School of Business at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. He also serves as a leader at Northland, a church distributed, located in Central Florida. Along with leaders from various fields, our goal is to provide practical wisdom for those navigating real-world business challenges. Welcome to this conversation about how to become a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Sam Serto, and you're listening to the Chasing Wisdom podcast. Here, leaders talk about business, Bible, and life to help all of us become wiser leaders. Today, our guest is Richard Milam. Richard is principal, founder, and CEO of EnableSoft, an enterprise that offers software products and services to assist businesses to automate costly manual processes. EnableSoft customers include over 500 corporate businesses worldwide, including banks, credit unions, healthcare providers, and others. Richard brings a wide range of experiences to EnableSoft. He has designed and implemented a plan to offer bank merger data conversion services, resulting in mergers of over 50 financial institutions during the Resolution Trust Corporation divestiture of the 90s. He has worked for the inventor of the automated teller machine and implemented ATM networks around the world. In addition to his technical expertise, Richard has held a variety of sales and consulting positions with several nationally known banking software companies. Prior to studying computer science at Illinois State University, Richard served in the United States Navy as a nuclear-trained engineer in the Navy Submarine Service. Here, he gained a true appreciation for the importance of people with whom he surrounds himself. Interesting to note, Richard is an instrument-rated private pilot and flies for both business and recreation. His professional affiliations include CEO Nexus and LifeWork Leadership. His charitable activities include strategic consulting for nonprofits and short-term mission trips. Welcome to the studio, Richard.
Great to be with you, Sam.
It's good to have you here. First thing I'd really like to do first is to thank you for your service to the country. And we try to make that a habit here on Chasing Wisdom Podcasting because we so appreciate what you guys do for us.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Did you actually spend some time on a nuclear sub? You were actually under the water for some time?
Yeah. I was under the water for 78 days one time. I did seven missile patrols in the Pacific out of Guam on the USS Abraham Lincoln.
Okay. And evidently that was an important experience for you in terms of building your leadership style.
I just got to be with great leaders, work with very closely with them. The guy that became was the engineer on our ship became the president of the company that lobbies for the nuclear industry. And the guy, Tep, that got me interested in computer science, created the artificial intelligence language that Sun Microsystems became Sun Microsystems product. And he's a professor at University of Hawaii now.
Wow, wow.
Plus all the enlisted guys I work with have just been very smart and had great careers and great families. And I'm still friends with one of them after all these years.
Okay, good. Okay, let's jump into the content of your podcast here. And as you know, the audience here is interested in insights about leadership and the Bible and how to put those two together. And that will be the thrust of what we do here. And we have a lot of different situations over the last year and a half, of leaders being in different kinds of organizations. You're in EnableSoft. Tell us a little bit about it so people can sort of relate to it and see how they might be able to take insights from you into their leadership situations, which might be in different countries and companies.
Well, EnableSoft was founded for the purpose of filling a business need, and that business need was, and as all companies are, if they're founded for the right reasons, I think, to provide a product and a service that didn't exist. And what that was is that during that RTC divestiture, those banks, those pieces of savings and loans needed to be converted so fast that they couldn't do it programmatically. They didn't have enough people on the side of the vendors, so people were relegated to keying in names and addresses and account information and doing manual transactions. And there was a need for some technology to help knowledge workers and subject matter experts be able to move information into systems of record or core systems, if you will, themselves without involving IT. And that did not really exist. You know, you probably might have heard of macros or things like that, but nothing that an end user could use in a reliable industrial strength way. So We created that, and we have nurtured that for 22 years and focused on it and advanced it. And now that movement is called the robotic process automation movement, and it's sweeping the world rapidly in the last 3 years.
So building a company is really a marathon as opposed to a sprint.
It is a long view exercise.
I'd like to also bring up to everyone that's listening, the website of Richard's company is enablesoft.com. It's enablesoft.com. And there is also a YouTube channel that people can go to. And that is youtube.com/user/digital employee. And we're going to go through a lot of information here. And if you're interested in digging deeper, those two sources should help everybody to move forward. Okay, let's talk some about your products. And I guess I'm referring to Foxtrot.
Yes.
Is a new product and a growing product. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we named it Foxtrot because the other software that we were using as a platform to develop it alongside was called Rumba. So we thought, well, the dance thing worked, and we're kind of making your data dance into the screens. And and I'm a Navy guy, and we use the phonetic alphabet a lot, so Foxtrot seemed like a cool name, and we own the trademark on that now. And that's what it's been called all along. Foxtrot, we're calling it Foxtrot, the latest version, Foxtrot RPA, and we call it your automated employee because digital employee was taken.
Okay.
You got to get those things down and registered first. But automated employee does resonate with our public and communicates to them, the function. And we look at it as it enables employees to be automated, but it also can be an automated employee on its own.
Okay, and what does that mean? What does that, as I think about an automated employee, is the software is in a sense the automated employee, and why is it called that, and how does it impact the organization?
Well, Sam, in the back room of every organization and sometimes in the front room, there's all these myriad of manual processes because unlike Apple, where you've got one owner of the software, the hardware, and the store, the real business world, the rest of us in the business world, there's multiple disparate applications in banking. There's an internet banking system, and then there may be a system where they process the loans and deposits until they've been closed, and then they got to move to the core system. And there's all these systems where the same data has to be entered to process, and they don't necessarily talk to each other, or there's a need for a conversion, and you can't automate it for some reason because of the cost or available resources. And so all over the world, people are relegated to entering data manually, and it's a huge industry. In fact, it's called outsourcing, and I think this movement towards robotic process automation is driven by the fact that now people that need to outsource don't want their data leaving the building, let alone the country.
Right. As we exchange material in preparation for this, I saw a lot of computerese language in what was written, what you wrote, which is your natural language. And I was thinking, how am I going to simplify this for everybody? But you did a good job of putting it forward that way. Okay, now, Tell us a bit about your role in the company.
Well, currently I'm what we would call the visionary CEO, but I've done every job in the company over the 22 years. That's one of the joys and curses of being the entrepreneur and the founder.
You have to, right?
And you need to work with small teams and limited resources. You have to be willing to wash dishes as well as cook. And so this visionary thing is basically I'm in charge of big relationships and you know, vision of the product and the markets going forward. But in our company, our size, that means I'm there as a servant leader to everybody else that's working in the company and needs that sometimes that 50,000 foot view of where we're going as a company.
Right.
And then I have what we would call a new integrator. The rest of the world would look at it as a chief operating officer that actually is the executive that runs the company.
Okay. And when you look at visionary kinds of activities, I know that a lot of our listeners are also responsible for creating vision for their companies. And I did a little bit of homework and came up with a few things that you're doing that are, I'm sure, related to that vision. And I'd like to drill down a little bit to see what that vision is. I'm seeing partnerships with a United Kingdom-based company, partnership with a Denmark-based company, and then comes Foxtrot. And there's also an interface that's called Fun. How do all these things fit together, and where do you see the company going? Because these, I guess, are implementations of what your vision is.
Well, as a company begins, you have to go direct to the market. As Kawasaki, who ran the Macintosh division of Apple, said in his book, Art of the Start, as a startup, anybody that would have you for a partner, you wouldn't want. we have not been able to go directly through partners until just this time. So the vision for a long time is to be the size and have the product in a place and have a market where people were interested in bundling our software with their solutions or private labeling and selling. So that is just starting to begin. Direct selling is really fun, but it's really hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, that's what we've struggled with the most is selling directly, building sales team, managing those sales teams. And so we may be at the cusp of starting to transition to channel marketing with the product, and that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. When we start to talk about, and let's shift gears a little bit, starting to talk about how biblical themes might come into some of the things that you're doing, and you mentioned building trust is an important part of your challenge in building the right kind of company culture. Tell us about your leadership style and how trust comes through and the support for that notion.
Well, I'll truly confess, we haven't done a good job on trust for a long time. And as we started to decide to grow the company and implement what's called an entrepreneurial operating system called Traction, and accountability started to get clearer and roles started to be developed more fully, and we, you know, started spreading around the ownership and in the leadership team, it became evident that we didn't trust each other as much as we thought we did.
Uh-huh.
And I can tell you that is a real showstopper. And you know, a scripture reference to vision is, and I don't know the reference, but it's without a vision, people perish. I would say, without trust, a business perishes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look through the literature, there are lots of quotes. There's one that's offered by Brian Tracy, and who is a motivational speaker. And he simply says the glue that holds all relationships together, including the relationship between the leader and the led, is trust. And trust is based upon the idea of integrity.
And Covey, the son Covey, has written a book called The Speed of Trust, mm-hmm. about how trust accelerates everything, including business processes. So we've worked hard on that in the last year and made a huge amount of progress. And but it is better to start with building trust in mind. And trust, naturally, I think, is one of these things like our faith. It's a muscle. Unless you really focus on it and use it and pay attention to it and identify quickly and solve problems that war against trust, it can just disintegrate around you very quickly.
And I think that a lot of people listening to this are saying kind of the same thing in their minds or nodding their heads as they're running or walking and listening to this. Can you give us some insight about your intentionality to develop trust, what things you've done? You give us a good reference to the idea that if you don't develop your biceps intentionally, they're probably going to go away. I think I've experienced some of that, actually, Richard.
Yeah, me too.
But what did you do to help build that trust?
I did what every good business person does. I brought in a consultant. This being an industrial psychologist in this case. And we did some offsites with the leadership team. We did some company meetings, and those were some hard meetings. I'm the one that had to really own up and say, listen, there was a little bit of a 360 type of thing that was done, and some things came out that I was doing that were destroying trust, and I had to get in front of everybody and own that, and mm-hmm. essentially confess the sins, and said I'm sorry, and I'm going to work to be better. But I need you guys to work as well, and you know my team stepped up, and so we're in a much better place.
Good.
12 months later.
Good. We have a feature called Sunday to Monday in a podcast, and it's kind of like what you might hear on a Sunday from a pulpit that you could take into your work day and really the rest of your work life. And there's one scripture that sort of hits me about this idea of trust, and I'd like to get your reaction to it. It's 2 Timothy 3:16, and it says that all scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness. Could that be a foundation for building trust in a leader's mind?
That's one of my favorite. That's one of my memory verses. Where does trust come from? Well, it has to come from truth, right? So where do we get truth?
Mm-hmm.
God breathed the truth into Scripture, and that's how we get to know God's character and what His designs for our life are. And it's and we find this to be the case, Sam. We obviously don't require everybody to be a believer, and everybody's at a different place in their path. But if there is not some sort of moral, scriptural foundation, whether they know where it comes from or not, it's almost impossible to have trust with somebody.
So you don't really have to go around citing scripture. People will get their view of how you behave and the things that you do, and they'll store that up.
Right. And you may be the only Bible some people read.
Mm-hmm.
And they read us all the time, and they see, they watch what we do. And if what we do lines up with our faith, then that's a pretty strong message. If it doesn't, it's a really, really a bad message.
You like the idea that that people need to grow their assets, and those assets not only include the people that work for you, but the physical assets, and that's what the leader focuses on and moves toward. And I know you like to talk about the parable of the talents as an illustration of that. And that's Matthew 25, verses 14 to 30, someplace around in there. Can you give us a kind of a view of that parable and how it fits those two responsibilities of a leader?
Well, that parable was the essence of a course that I took called Biblical Entrepreneurship, which was the impetus for me to really start growing the company about 5 years ago. You know, we had started, we had grown, and flew my airplane all over the country, calling on banks and selling software, but it kind of became a lifestyle business, and I was pretty comfortable. And the parable of the talents, as you know, is the master gave different numbers of talents or gifts to these three different people, mm-hmm. and then left. And one person with the least number buried him because he feared that the master was going to be cruel and scold him and punish him if he lost it. And the middle guy invested him and did okay. And the one that was given the most really worked hard and put it all out there, took risk, and did the best. And the one that got the one that was in the best place with the master is the last one, and the one that was in the worst place was the first one.
Right.
And that really struck me that, well, I've been given, everything we do comes from gifts from God. We don't take a breath. We don't have a thought that God doesn't enable us to have, of course. But the tangible things are like a business idea, mm-hmm. a family, our stuff, which we can become too enthralled with. But I realized I've been given this gift of this business that I could create not only wealth for me and others, but to employ people and give them opportunities and build build the kingdom through building a godly business. And so I got after it.
Right.
We were Inc. 5000 2 years in a row. The last 3 years ago, we were a little flat last year, but we made some leadership changes and management changes, and that's always stuck with me, and I would commend that to anybody that's in that place where they're deciding what are we doing here and why we're here.
Right. I'd like to end this podcast with actually a pearl of wisdom that you submitted, and basically the thought is that we often become the lids for people's growth, and they don't grow beyond us. And I think that's sort of what you're saying with the parable of the talents as well. And for leaders listening, your advice given that pearl is, hey, get out of the way. Let them grow. Let them develop. And don't be the one that stops that growth and development. But I hate to say this, Richard, but your time is up. Thank you so much for being here today. You can find Richard with the email address rmilam, let me spell it for you, rmilam at enablesoft.com. Thanks to all of you for being here on Wisdom Wednesday. You can keep in touch with me on Facebook at chasing.wisdom or my website, chasewisdom.com. For my Chasing Wisdom book, today's question to ask yourself is this: do I intentionally take the time to build trust in my organization? If you do, you'll be surprised what happens to your leadership. I'll see you next Wednesday. And remember, for everyone out there, keep chasing. God bless.
You've been listening to Chasing Wisdom with host Dr. Sam Serto. We would love to hear from you regarding this podcast. You can reach us at northlandchurch.net/chasingwisdom. We will be here each Wednesday with a fresh look at being a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life. Want to reach out to Dr. Serto? Email him at sserto@rollins.edu.